Just a friendly reminder that the opinions expressed on this show are not worth a Canadian penny, so disregard anything you hear that might get anyone in trouble. And despite some of the great ideas you may hear, don't try them at home. Go to a friend's house instead.
It's time to get a gun. That's what I've been thinking. Well, I could afford one. And if I did just a little less drinking, time to put something between me and the sun. Get a gun.
Hello, everyone, or welcome to Slam Fire Radio. This is episode 565 for July 24th, 2024. I'm one of your hosts, Adriel.
I'm another host, Kyle.
And Kelly is driving back from Skeet, so she should skeet her butt down here very quickly.
Yes.
Join the end, and we'll talk about guns and stuff. I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, it sounds like a great idea.
Canadian-related gun podcast of some kind. Well, maybe we'll shoot the breeze, talk about gun stuff, talk about slam fires in our guns.
Yeah.
See where the topic takes us. You know what? I feel like I'm ready to talk. I'm gonna talk about what I did this week in guns.
All right.
So this weekend, I went through our pal doubleheader, camped out at Sherwood Park. Did the PAL, RPAL. It's great. Yeah, lots of people who did the PAL also came to the RPAL. Lots of interest in it, too. I actually had way more, double the people in the restricted class than I did the non-restricted. And again, at the start of the year, when you would have asked me, hey, Joel, how many people do you think you're going to get for the PAL versus RPAL? I would say all for PAL, none for RPAL. But that's because I was wrong. And actually, lots of people are interested in getting their restricted license. So, yeah, that continues to be true. While I was there on one of the evenings, I went out and shot my Raven. I did this with this big bad scope on there. This is that Athlon Helos BTR Gen 2 6-24x56. And I have it on the primary arms cantilever mount. And it was good. It was really good. Actually, I got some really decent accuracy. So I was trying different blaster ammo. So just XM193, which is like military reject 193 stuff. And I tried some M855, which is probably also military reject stuff. And the 855 wasn't as accurate. It was still okay. And then the 193 was pretty good. Here's just like three random groups at the top of this target. And two of them are well within sub MOA, and one of them is just a little bit beyond. Real decent, really decent. Yeah. That's what I want to see. So accuracy was fantastic. One thing that happened is that I discovered it before it broke. My charging handle started to bend, kind of out towards the muzzle there a little bit. And I was like, huh, that's interesting. So I removed the one that was bending. Because keep in mind, I had two of them in, right? I had put in doubles for backup. And one of them started bending. So I took that one out. And then the other one started bending. And I'm like, well, that's odd. Like, I can assume, you know, bad metallurgy or something like that. But why both? That was definitely my clue that something else was wrong.
Yeah.
So I stripped it down. And I'm like, I got to take a look in the inside of this thing. And I checked with Kyle beforehand. I didn't know this. He didn't know this.
No.
308 buffers are different than 5.56 buffers. Even though it's the same platform and everything, 308's shorter than the other one. So I was running the 308 one because it's an H2 buffer. It's a lot heavier and it was still running. So I was like, fantastic, heavier buffer, and it's still cycling. That means that I don't have an adjustable gas block because I like to keep things simple. So I was running the heaviest one I could, H2. But without that extra length, my charging handles were hitting the receiver. And I couldn't actually tell. I actually did look before. But you can't tell on this little ridge because it's a perfect fit. So it was hitting it perfectly on, like dead on every time. and it was not doing any damage. Wasn't doing any damage to the receiver. Wasn't doing any damage to the charging handle. Just slowly, slowly bending it or breaking it, which is the case last time, right? So I changed the buffer and changed my charging handles. And I think things are going to be okay now.
Cool.
I think so.
I still say adjustable gas block.
Well, I'm too lazy, so I'm I'm going to get the rear charger on there. And then after that, I may or may not leave one or neither of these charging handles on, depending on how the rear charger is. I might still leave one on just in case, just as a backup, right? Because who knows what might go wrong or what might happen. So it might be nice to have one of those. But like, I actually haven't had a jam with it yet. It's been, like, it's given me 100% reliability with every shot I've taken through it.
Nice.
The only problem I've had so far is there's been the charging handle thing, and I figured out that was user error. That was my problem. I didn't assemble it correctly.
Yeah.
So good. And the other thing I noticed is I wasn't quite sure about the magazine release because it isn't in a great spot, but I didn't even think about it, and I just used it and it was okay. So I don't think I need to do anything there. The ping pong paddle is kind of hard to hit. I've been spoiled by the bad lever for years before I was so old on my AR that I didn't have any bad lever on. I did the slap on the side. I think I'm just going to use a charging handle to re-engage this thing.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the side charger is fast enough. So accuracy is fantastic. The really good stuff there, that was, XM193. So I'm going to try to get some more of that stuff. My reloaded ammo gave me really good accuracy as well. It's just the MA55, it was opening up to like inch and a half. It's still good enough. It's still well good enough. I was testing with this scope because one of the other things I wanted to find out is this thing going to be good enough for a known distance event? And the answer is yes. I need 1.5 MOA for a known distance.
Okay.
That's the maple seed at long range. Can you make hits on like a target like that at 400? Based on that accuracy, yes.
Yeah.
Yes, that's doable. If I can't make it, it's me, not the rifle. So I think that's what I'm going to do is get some more of that 193, do some more shooting with this guy on it, with the scope on it. And then in the meantime, I put the red dot back on, and that's what I'll be using for three gun. I'll just swap on the red dot and swap off the scope when I want to do the longer range stuff, which will be a lot less often. Usually I'll just have that red dot on there. And I found that it did return to zero. So when I put the red dot back on, I was back on steel, like the little, circular steel there. So that was all good. Just had to eat some crow on the Raven charging handle issue because it looks like I caused that problem the entire time. I got some Culpin gun holders to add to my cart for three gun matches. So those came in and I'm going to add those to my cart. So the next three gun match, I've got those on there. They're just to kind of hold the guns. So I've got one of those like Costco wagons. And if you have that holder, it just kind of holds the gun a little bit more firmly. You put them on one edge of it, and then you just jam the bottom of your gun into the bottom of the cart. You don't put it even, so it's aiming at people. You put it down to the ground kind of a thing. But this one just holds the back of it, so it doesn't like slam side to side and like scratch up some guns or whatever.
Yeah. Cool.
And they collapse down better than the kiddie strollers. Like the kiddie strollers still take like quite a bit of space, even though they roll nicer and that kind of thing, but I don't care.
We basically got the wagon now, but I still use like a bag for my long guns. But I had this stroller before and it's nice, but yeah.
You bag them because you care about scratching them, right? You don't want to put in the wagon with your ammo cans and all that other kind of crap.
Yeah, that's the reason. Yeah.
that's something I don't care about.
No, I bag them just because I don't want to build something like what you're doing with the racks and with the gun holders and that.
Oh,
so I have the backpack. I just have the backpack bag, throw that on, and then all that.
I see. Yeah. So I got that. One of the other shoot bosses at Maple Seed. So this is a USGI sling. It's a cotton. This stuff's nice and soft because I've used it a lot and I actually soaked it for a while. This stuff came from Greece and it works really great, but you can't, they're hit and miss whether you can find them or not. One of the other shoot bosses gave me a roll of this cotton 1¼ inch, which is what the good stuff is made of. Now, the problem with this is the hardware. Ooh. So I found some tri-glides, and they're fine. They're not quite mil-spec, but they're metal, and this is by far good enough. It's the cam buckle that, like, and I've been looking for this stuff for years, and this is plastic, and this will not do it.
Won't no.
Do it. I need to find where you can get the metal cam buckles, and I can't find them. They just don't exist.
Hmm.
Yep. Don't exist any. Like, every time you search for them, you find the whole sling, if you can find it. So
interesting.
Although I'm like, I'm 90% of the way there. I like, this is the part that's holding me back. I was thinking about using tie down straps, not the ratchet ones, but like the pull ones with the little toothy guy on there. I was thinking about maybe doing something like that, where this is one side and then you just have this cut. And then this other side here, you've got it looped around and you've got it sewn, and you got like two loose ends, but one loose end has the toothy guy on there. Yeah. And then you just like put this guy through there and like pull on it to tighten it. That might work. Yeah. I might try that.
Yeah.
I might try just the, but then I got to get 1¼ inches, and that's not a standard strap size. Standard strap size is 1 inch. So I might not be able to find that either. So my dreams of being able to do that might be dashed. I got a letter in from FedEx. They did the import on my Dillon parts, and I got dinged on import duty for the $80
for warranty parts.
Yeah, for warranty parts. I think I'm going to contact FedEx and be like, "Yo, these are warranty parts." But Dillon put like these are worth $250. Oh. They put the value on there instead of just saying zero warranty parts or something like that, right? They didn't put anything like that because I'm Canadian, you know, heck with us. So, I'm going to fight with FedEx for a bit. I'm probably going to lose, but I'm going to fight with FedEx for a bit. Maybe Dillon, who knows? And then the last thing I wanted to talk about was one of the people at my PAL course there mentioned, like, oh yeah, they had changed the powder regs. I'm like, oh yeah, they did that, but I didn't really take a close look. I know I'm still under, but I wanted to take a close look while I was there. And they changed it. So buying and selling, yeah, you need to have a PAL and blah blah blah, all this other kind of stuff. Storage requirements for users is kind of complicated. I don't know if any of you have taken a look at one of these things. Okay, if you have an explosives license, let's just ignore that because none of us do. Dwelling. If you're an attached dwelling, you can store up to 25 kg of powder. That's smokeless and black powder combined, but the amount of black powder has to be 10 kg or less. So that's about 50 pounds. Not really a lot. If you have a couple of 8-pound jugs, you're already well on your way to running into this limit. You're permitted to store up to 5 kg in an attached dwelling if it's in containers that are greater than 1 kg. That doesn't seem like a lot. I don't know what this is actually saying. I don't know if this is saying that.
Well, I think if your container holds more than 1 kilogram or has more than 1 kilogram in it, you can only have 5 kilograms in total.
I think that's what this is saying.
Like, but so if you were buying
5 kilograms per container, it's saying if you have containers that are greater than 1 kilogram, you can only have 5 kg.
Yeah. So if you're buying the 4-pound, bottles of powder, you can only have 5 kilograms, but if you're buying them in 1-pound bottles, then you can have your 25 kilograms.
Yes. Well, not even that, because it's in an attached dwelling, you can do 20 kg if they're 1 kg or less. So that's what your 1-pounders, you can have 20 kg. But if you're in a detached dwelling, then you can do 25 kg. So that up to 25.
Okay, so they have
absolute
this
absolute max.
Yeah, 25 is your black powder and smokeless, but you can only have up to 10 kilograms of black powder. You can only have up to 20 kilograms of smokeless. And if you have a container that is greater than 1 kilogram, then you can only have 5. You're right that this is so, wow.
If we're reading it properly, it's really limiting, right?
Yeah, and very confusing and very circumstantial. Like, it's like, wow.
But what happened to all.
Like, oh, you can only, okay, you can only store like 40 pounds, period. That's it.
Well, that would be easier. Hey. That would be a lot easier. But no, that's not how it is. Okay, that's not all. You have to store it away from flammable substances and sources of ignition. Okay, fine.
But the keeps it dry.
The furnace keeps it dry, yeah. Sitting on top of the furnace keeps it dry. You must ensure that they can only be accessed by people you have authorized. Okay. Storage unit. Okay, storage unit, you can have 75 kg in a storage unit that's not attached to the dwelling, whether in a single unit or several. But there's some requirements around it. Prevent unauthorized access. Attended when it's unlocked. Exits unobstructed. Shelving made of non-sparking material, wood or painted metal. Wouldn't burn. I guess they're okay with that.
Yeah, and painted metal, I don't trust that for not sparking, because one little chip and they...
Well, and who, like, how much of a drop or what do you got to do to get a spark off of this thing that's going to light the whole thing up? Yeah. Like, quite a bit.
Yeah.
If you think about, like, a primer puts out, like, a ton of fire and spark, and it works usually. Not always. Okay, you have to separate cartridges, blank cartridges, unmixed reactive and black powder separately. Okay, who cares? Precautions that minimize the likelihood of an ignition or fire must be taken. And then you need a sign that says, and it has to be bilingual. It has to say danger, fire hazard, risk the incendiary in letters that are at least 10 centimeters high. That's about yay high right there.
The width of your hand, yeah.
But that's how high that, like, the actual sign is going to be like that. Or no, because it's in bilingual. It's going to be, yeah, it's going to be fucking huge.
Yeah.
Must be posted on the storage unit in a clearly visible location. So you're not going to do this on a real storage unit. This is going to be like a workshop or something like that. Yeah. If that's where you do your reloading, like that's, but you're not going to put this in like your self storage. They might not be too happy if you did that kind of thing. And then there's some other requirements or sellers and that kind of thing. But yeah, it's looks like the storage requirements are limiting. Kind of limiting. I don't know if I'm reading this correctly. I think I am, but
well, and you're not buying bulk. You're just buying 1 pound containers. Is anything bigger than that, you're going to be really limiting yourself.
Yeah. But I don't know if this is like, if this is just for the big jugs, just for like, are you just allowed to have 5 kg of stuff in the big jugs?
Or well, that's just it. What if you have one big jug and a bunch of 1 pounders?
Maybe it's fine. I don't really know how to read this. I don't know how to read this.
They don't know how to read it.
They should put some pictures with some examples. Be like, oh, look, you have 1 8-pounder and you have a couple of 10. They're ones. No problem. Oh, 5K. Oh, you can't have like 4 8-pounders right next to each other because that's more than this. You know, like maybe make it a little bit easier for us non-lawyers to figure out what these requirements are. Anyways, I saw it and I was like, ah, this looks like a total pain in the ass. And I doubt that very many reloaders are abiding by these rules at all. If like, I don't know any.
Yeah, right.
The sticker, that sticker's on your like shop where you do reloading or whatever. No. And then the requirements on the propellant powder, like some people are probably within, probably a lot of people are in compliance just because they don't have a lot of reloading powder. But yeah. Some, like I think plenty of people are running afoul of these rules just because they don't know that they're so extreme.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anywho, that's all I was up to. What about you?
Well, my jerseys came in, so and they came in right when they were supposed to. So I am wearing the sleeveless here tonight, and actually pretty happy because they actually did a proper sleeveless cut on it instead of just making a hoodie without sleeves. And yeah, so overall, pretty happy with how they turned out. Nice light material. And their colors on the short sleeve are kind of interesting. They're kind of like those Mandarin colors that you guys were getting.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
I like those. I like those collars.
Yeah, I don't mind them. I threw me off when I first saw it, but hey, I don't mind them at all. And
these
then,
other kind, like sometimes they go a little flippy floppy, or like the crappy ones will like roll up on you and look stupid.
Yeah.
Yeah. Those other ones stay tight.
And then the hoodie, like, so yeah, they came in and extremely happy with them. That there will be some tweaks for next year, but for, you know, getting them designed and in hand in a week. Yeah. That's phenomenal.
Yeah, I agree.
And then, I wasn't on the show last week, but I was listening to the show while I drove up to Minnesota for Multigun Nationals. And so it was a good weekend. It was a fun match. It was an extremely difficult match. They were definitely like national level stages. And I did not perform at all what I hoped. I don't know if I've ever had to use my brain for stage planning and while shooting ever while like doing three gun or anything. Cause it was, yeah, like they were extremely difficult. The hit factor threw us off because of scheduling and that. Like, obviously, it did take longer for reset. But before I get into any of that stuff, just talk about the performance. So, I think I had maybe one clean stage. I had.
Oh, no.
Yeah. I zeroed. So when stage. You said
difficulty, like you're talking about like stage breakdown difficulty and shooting difficulty.
Well, yeah, and like the shooting difficulty because of the stage plan you had to come up with.
Hmm.
So there, I have never retreated so much in a match in my life. I've never hot reholstered so much in a match in my life. It was all advanced stuff. And the hot reholstering, I was kind of fine. But like it states, you shouldn't require hot reholstering. And basically, and I ended up talking to Yi Min, the USPSA president. He was there and I talked and he asked me how I thought. And I said, well, a hot reholstering, like if you want to be competitive in this match, like if you want to do even decent to this match, you have to hot reholster. Like there's not an option, especially on these stages. They had a number of stages where they didn't have a pistol dump. So it's, you either finish with your pistol, which a lot of the times was not the smart option, was not the competitive option. So it's like, so no, if you're competitive, you are hot reholstering. You are required to hot reholster. So I wasn't a fan of that. Like, okay, fine. Have the option out there. Remember when we were talking about previous USPSA Multigun Nationals and how they had brought out rules where the guys were like laying down a rifle, pulling their pistol.
Yeah, put the gun down as long as it's within 3 feet. You don't go 3 feet from it. You can do some other stuff.
Oh, yeah. I did that on a few stages. Because it was just beneficial. You shooting the pistol, hot reholstered, grab shotgun, start shooting. Okay. Dump that, grab my pistol, continue shooting. And it happened a few times. And, you know, it was just, you had to be on your ball for gaming and know the little intricacies of the rules. A bunch of option targets, lots of movement. I was not prepared. I thought I was more prepared than I was for the match. And I just was not prepared for what they were putting out there.
I mean, you build stages to what you want to test for. Right. And I think that when it comes to multi-gun, there's a couple of things you want to test for: accuracy, speed. Okay. Yeah. Obviously drawing the guns out of the dump sled seems silly, but that's one that you have to do fast regardless. Transitions, yep. Breaking down the stage to make best use of each gun where you're the strongest. I think like a really good three gun stage will test that and force people to come up with interesting ideas on how to use their different guns. I think like putting your gun down on the grass and using your other gun and then picking it back up again. I don't think that's not an interesting skill to test for.
No, that's just testing your gaming. And because normally it's either once you move like another three gun, once you move that 3 feet away from the abandoned gun or fire shots from the next platform, it is dead. You can't go back to it. But USPSA doesn't have the if rounds fired from your next platform. It's like when we went to like Prairie Fire and stuff like that, and you dump something and you draw your pistol or you grab your next gun, as long as you were still there and you hadn't fired a shot, you could put down your new the one you're going to and pick up your old one and shoot.
I think a good stage design shouldn't make that advantageous, or shouldn't make you shoot like that. We'll even be simpler like that, because it's kind of a weird way to shoot. If you're to shoot like, okay, I hate to take a synthetic sport like three gun and say in real life, but in real life, you wouldn't shoot one gun, put it down, shoot another one and take the other one. You go back and shoot it.
Actually, you would. Cause so like when you're training with the rifle, your rifle is your primary, your pistol is your secondary. Like military will train that your rifle goes down. You don't sit there and clear it. You put it down, grab your pistol, shoot your pistol until you can get to a clear spot. Now you get cover or whatever. Reholster your pistol and get your rifle back in the game.
Sure. Like a good stage like that would have like, you're either using your pistol to fight up to your rifle or you're using rifle and then you dump it and you go pistol and continue with it. You wouldn't continue with both.
Yeah.
Or at least like that, like maybe you do one scenario like that. You wouldn't do more than one scenario like that, because there's, you really want to test people on their accuracy and speed, and other stuff you add in isn't testing people on accuracy and speed anymore.
Yeah,
I guess
absolutely. Like it is like the stage didn't require it, but I mean, it was definitely a game move, because it took what was a two or three down and back to a single down and back.
Yeah,
it
doesn't require.
But it took you further. I don't know which one was better, because I saw top level guys doing it both ways, and I mean, you're slower going down the one way versus, okay, you're rushing down there. I don't know. I don't know if it was advantageous, but it seemed like it was. But
coming soon on a match breakdown video with Kyle and Adriel. That's no, but like if that's the way that's fastest, then that's the way that you want people to shoot the stage, and that's the way people are going to shoot the stage. So.
Yeah, but I like the building a stage plan, not saying, okay, this is what you're going to do. Like, I'm going to put some targets out there and there's going to be some option targets, and it's going to be, okay, make your plan. How are you attacking this?
So, but in order for that to really work, you need to like really focus on making sure that you balance them well. So you need to make it so that, okay, option A, you might want to do this and this. Option B, you might want to do this and this. Now I'm going to focus on making sure that these targets are even enough to the point where competitors who shoot this thing, who are strong in pistol, are going to use pistol, or who are strong in shotgun, or use shotgun, and make it tempting for them to use one or the other. Or like, oh, this shot's kind of long at the end here. Maybe you're going to use your pistol, or maybe you're going to run back and grab your rifle and shoot with that. Like, that's, I think a good stage design will force variety that way, with a good balancing of targets and target presentations that will cause shooters to shoot them in different ways.
Yep. Oh, for sure. And like, there was one stage where I chose to hot reholster my pistol, and that one wasn't so that I could it was so I could be competitive, but you didn't have to do it to be competitive, because like you're talking the longer pistol shots. So they had down at the end of the bay, because they had two shooting areas. They had two wide open pistol targets and then two tuxedos. Well, you could take them from the back shooting area, and there was guys who did that, and then you didn't have to take your pistol forward. You could just go forward with your shotgun. I was not confident in that shot. So that I elected to hot reholster, go forward with my shotgun, take the shotgun, finish up with the pistol, and then run to the next bay for my rifle.
Rifle. Yeah.
Yeah. So interesting having the option. There were a couple stages where I felt like it was required. But yeah. So
like Tony's mentioning here, you're a soldier in Ukraine defending against drones with your shotgun. Suddenly the enemy appears and you have your anti-shotgun, you gotta dump it and use something else. I like that, because like doing that as a scenario, like in the stage, would be awesome. I think you should put that in a written stage brief of an event. And that would be because we finally do have a use for shotguns again in a modern battlefield. Drone defense.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think I think doing a scenario like that would be cool. Other than that, like it's really hard to make a case that three gun is like IRL stuff, because shotgun has no place, and shotgun caddies definitely have no place.
Yeah,
bolt mounted stuff, like none of this stuff makes any sense. But it's fun to shoot. That's the whole
point. For sure.
Fun to shoot, and you get to use more of the guns that might just collect dust if you didn't shoot them, right? With IPSC, you take one pistol out. With three gun, you get to use a shotgun. You get to use your semi-automatic rifle for what it's made for, and you get to use, you know, your pistol as well. So I like it for taking out more of my guns. Back in the day, again, an AR at the range, very boring. Just shooting at 1 or 2 or 300, super boring. Yep. Whereas using it in three gun, now that you're talking, now we're using it for what it's supposed to be used for.
Yeah. So I did end up with like my one or two good stages as per usual. The shotgun jungle run and foot fault, that bugs me. So I shot that with a time that would have been like fourth fastest for the division. But so pretty near every stage, you had to start straddling the fault line. 1 foot in, 1 foot out of the short shooting area. And on this stage, I forgot to pull my foot back in for the first array of four targets. So.
Wasn't it an advantage? Did you get dinged for every shot, or you just got dinged once?
In the end, no, I didn't. I only got one, but I realized as I left the position and went through the rest of the 37-round shotgun stage, thinking I had four procedurals because I took four shots at that. So I did start having some make-ups, but even just that one procedural, it knocked it from a fourth-place run to a seventh-place run.
That's still a pretty good run.
Oh, still, happy with that. And then one of my runs from Sunday morning, it was a really short stage. Ended up being a pretty good one. So, but yeah, overall just did not shoot great. I had mics and at least one mic on every stage. Even if I ran it good, there's a mic. Great. So, but overall, like the schedule, so the match itself, the schedule got totally screwed. I think, what was it? They were only allowing an hour to shoot a stage, and there was like stages of 15 people. And it was just, so we were supposed to start our first stage at like 1:30 on Friday afternoon. And we didn't start shooting till 4 o'clock. We couldn't get onto our stage till 4 o'clock. We were scheduled for five stages, only got four of them done. So then Saturday, we were the Saturday morning squad, and so we started shooting at 8 o'clock, and we weren't done shooting all our stages till 4 o'clock in the afternoon on Saturday. And so like awards went late, and the schedule got screwed up. Besides that, I mean, overall pretty good. Like it had some, still trying to formulate my overall thoughts on it, but they were definitely nationals level. Stage is not happy with my performance, but it is what it is.
Did other people do poorly too because it was so difficult?
Yeah, but yes and no. So it's really hard to gauge because you didn't have your normal, I would say, roster of shooters.
Uh huh.
it's like people saw Nationals and it's like, no, I'm not even going to bother with that. So like your Texas multi-gun, or like there's 23 people in tactical.
Oh,
Yeah.
Not much.
No.
How many people total was it were at the event?
160.
Well, that's a lot. So why weren't they in TAC Ops? Were they in like limited or?
They were, it was split between open and modified.
Huh. What's modified?
That's dot on your pistol, dot on your shotgun. They're actually talking about allowing you to have a basically turning that modified division into like the IPSC modified for like shotgun. So
like kind of sounds like open light.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
You can use a bipod, but you can't use like the bags and that.
It's open light.
Yep. Pretty much. I believe it's gotta be slide ride, so it's kind of like same thing as production optics. It's gotta be slide ride optic. Yep. But I'm trying to hold tight to TAC Ops, but that dot is looking inviting.
You like shooting a dot with your pistol?
I haven't gotten used to it enough to really say. I do, but I haven't really gotten used to it for it to really feel natural. So I would like to get a slide for my 2011 cut for a dot and to be able to swap back and forth.
I was kind of thinking of doing the same thing with my Shadow one of these days, but the slides are so expensive and I'm so cheap that I've avoided it.
Yeah. But
one of these days, maybe.
So they did something interesting with the prize table. So if you were not in the top 40% of your division, you didn't get to walk the table. But they did have what they called grab bags. So they basically took donated items and put them in bags. And when you finished the match, you walked up and somebody would go into the building and grab you a bag of something. So I had seen there was some guys with some scopes, some dots, and some other stuff. And I ended up with a Shaw Custom Titanium 1022 barrel.
Amazing.
So yeah, my 1022 is slowly getting built. So, but here's a question for you. So it fits in that Gray Birch CCFR receiver quite nicely. But the ejector slot, it seems to be clocked.
It's not at 90. It's a little bit off.
Okay. That's what I'm looking at. It's kind of almost like the quarter after 3:30 kind of thing.
Yeah. Once you put your barrel or your bolt in there, you'll see where it needs to be clocked. And your V block needs to be flat.
Well, that's what I was saying. I was lining up the V block and I noticed that was not indexed right at your 3 o'clock position. So that's my question, but not answered.
That's a $350 US barrel that you got there.
It's a $200 US barrel.
No, I'm looking at it right now. At ShawCustomBarrels.com.
Yeah.
$350.
Okay, I was looking at the wrong barrel then, because it says Shaw Custom Titanium 22 Long Rifle.
Yeah, there's no way that's $200. That is a way nicer barrel.
Yeah, and they say I can't shoot the stat. I gotta shoot high velocity stuff out of this, according to what I was reading their website.
Maybe it depends on what chamber.
You were saying like CCI Stinger,
Bent's chamber. Bent's is a good one that you can fit like lots of stuff in there. That's what most semi-autos use that are nicer chambers.
Yeah.
They're right.
The barrel is almost an inch in diameter, so I'm actually pretty excited that this might actually turn out to be a pretty decent precision barrel.
That's sleeved, eh?
Oh, is it?
It's a steel core, stainless steel core with a titanium tension sleeve over top.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah, as you can tell, I haven't been able to do much research on the barrel itself. It's just, a 1022 barrel. Cool.
It's very nice. What else do you need for your 1022?
Well, that's what I have for my 1022. So,
bolt, all the.
I need bolt, V block, chassis, trigger. Well, trigger is easy, but yeah, bolt, chassis, the V block. Basically, yeah, everything except for the receiver and the barrel. Now, here's a question: is it worth compensating a 22.
No,
it's got the threaded barrel, so it's like,
Oh, sorry. Suppressing?
Well, yes. No, I was saying compensating because I can't get suppressors yet.
No. It's not worth compensating. No. Like to look cool, cool. Yeah. Yes. If you want it to look cool, go ahead. But it does nothing.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I was kind of thinking about that. I was like, there's not enough gas for it to do anything.
What length of barrel is that? 16 or 18?
16 and a half.
16. Yeah. They have the 16 or the 18. That's better. Yeah. 16 is better.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, I'm looking forward, and eventually this will get built out.
Yeah. You need a bolt. Recoil spring, charging handle, trigger, stock.
Yeah. Well, trigger, I'll get a Timney, a Calvin Elite in there.
Yep.
I was looking at some kid stuff, like the kid V block.
Mm-hmm.
And bolt. Yeah, but interesting with the kid V block, they don't cut for the, I was reading their thing that for like a alignment screw, it's just got the two front screws.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess their theory is like, because
that's it. Most of them just have the two screws.
Gray Birch is actually threaded for it, but
yeah, no. You don't need that one. You need the two on the front, and that one's like a tensioner,
right? Which it's how easy already that fairly
fit in there.
It's pretty precision fit, like
okay.
Like right back at the chamber.
Yeah,
they're right back at that chamber. Like it's like precision, like.
A lot of them, you have to put the barrel in the freezer and then put it together.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's...
Oh, that's not that... Okay, so it's not that...
Almost a press fit. Shouldn't be, but...
Yeah, that sounds, like crush fit.
Yeah. Yeah, Sporting Rifle's saying if you want to run stingers, then get a tuner. This one says not to use stingers in it. It's just Ely Force. Yeah, Ely or SK or something like that.
Right,
Good accuracy from that. That's going to be an accurate barrel. So now you have to get accurate everything else.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a dope prize to get.
I thought it was pretty cool. Like it looked like I just did a quick look when I was at work today, so I didn't have the barrel in my hands to make sure I was looking at the right one. And I found was $200, it was a spiral fluted barrel. And I was like, yeah, okay, cool.
Maybe that's one of their regular steel ones, not the titanium steel.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, pretty stoked about that. And yeah, not bad way to do the prize table in my mind. You don't get to walk the table, but it made the process quicker and people still got something.
Mm-hmm.
And still got something pretty good. But
I still like random draw. Cause then it like you lucked out. Yeah. You have it. You got.
Well, that was random draw, basically. With the, I just didn't get to pick. It was random draw, and the guy went in. I didn't get to see what he's grabbing. He just come out with a bag.
I like random draw where you get to pick.
Yeah,
because then even like you get to pick something that you need or want, right?
Yeah,
something that you'll take. Whereas like random, like if I receive. I don't know. I received something for like a REM 700, like a REM 700 stock or action or anything like that. I don't have any of those. I don't desire to have any of those. It's wasted on me.
Oh, and I got lucky. I happen to have the 1022 receiver here on that.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah.
Obsidian Arms was at the match. They had a booth set up and they were actually having a pretty good deal on some of their punches. So I bought like an eight piece punch set. And like those are nice punches. Like these ones are just your standard flat punches.
Yeah.
And basically, like they were running dealer costs. So basically, I got the two rolls for the price of this normal.
Wow. For
one of them normal price. And then this one is like a AR-15 Armorer's pin set.
Mm-hmm.
So it's got every pin and punch you need for an AR.
Some roll pin punches in there with a little dimple on the top.
Yeah, and set punches too.
Mm.
So roll pin set punches, a bolt catch removal punch. And yeah, it even has a trigger pin drift. So when you're doing like a GI trigger or whatever, you can have that in there and then push your pin in there. So you put some thought into it. And then of course it's got like for your takedown pins, your set rod for putting those in.
Mm-hmm.
Your detents for your takedown pins. So
nice, yeah.
So yeah, nice little kits there.
I'm jealous. My punch pin set in the workshop has had to grind down two of them, and they're hurting now.
Oh yeah,
they're cheap enough. I was like, I'll just grind it down to fit this other thing that I need it for. But I've been trolling on Amazon for a better set. I found a bunch of roll pin sets. I want flat. I want like to drift pins out. But
yeah. Well, you like the Wheeler or like that Obsidian. The thing with the Obsidian one. Mm-hmm. Is it doesn't have the long shaft, so if you're deep, you can't use them for that. That's where like the Wheeler long roll pin punch set was really nice.
But yeah, maybe I'll have to look for those then.
But and then not shooting well. I mean, we had a great squad and lots of great people up there. But it was good week. We did some camping along the way, up and down, and. But might go to Roswell this weekend. I still don't know. They're having their monthly match, so I might go there. And then in 2-3 weekends, right around the 10th, I got Rocky Mountain 3-gun coming up. So go work that and shoot.
Lots of big matches.
Yeah, and I imagine fairly soon we'll maybe talk after the show about when we'll have to catch up on some match breakdowns.
Yeah.
And then I'll go more into detail. I'll be able to go in more into detail on nationals and actually show
what's
going on.
The actual stages.
Yeah.
We should do one after September. Cause I'm going to have two majors in September that I'm going to show.
We could do that, or we could do one now and then one.
Yeah. Yeah. We could do that too. Yeah. Double it up. Let's do that.
I still have Magpul Texas 3-gun to go through.
Mm-hmm.
And a few smaller matches, but yeah.
Yeah, I got the Sherwood Park big match I went to that I could talk about as well.
Yeah, but,
well. Neat. Anything else?
No, that'll be it for me right now, yeah.
All right, getting into upcoming events. A 3-gun, I got it up.
Okay.
Can we go through that? I'll go through it. July 27th, that's this weekend, Mighty Peace 3-gun Steve's retirement party. That'll be on the Saturday. CDTSA 3-gun is on Sunday. That's near Calgary. Chaz 3-gun, August 3rd. That's coming up soon here. Niagara Regional 3-gun Championship, also August 3rd. Sherwood Park Multigun, August 10th. Canadian Multigun Series 2024, and will be September 6th. September 7th will be Chaz 3-gun Battle of Alberta. I'll be there. CDTSA 3-gun match September 8th, and then the Sherwood Park Fishing Game Multigun will be September 24th, followed by, I'm just going to finish off September here, MP3G team match will be September 28th. So those are the two big ones that I've got are the Chaz 3-gun Battle of Alberta, and then the Mighty Peace 3-gun team match will both be in September. Yeah. I'll also be at that August 3rd one, unless they cancel it, because it's like no one's signing up for that right now. For Maple Seed, we are, yes, that day, Ontario. We've got a couple of events there. We'll sold out, but sign up for the waiting list for these things, because sometimes people like drop out last minute, and then we email people and we can't find anyone to join. But GBHA Midland, HHGC Penetanguishene, those are both July 27th and 28th. KTSA Kamloops, that'll be August 1st. It says register here, but I bet you that one's sold out. Let's find out. Ontario Cornwall, that's August 10th. So it's coming up here as well. That KTSA, does it have spots left? It does have spots left. So if you're in Kamloops and it's not on fire, that's August 1st. You have to add that.
Yeah.
Qualifier right now for anything in BC or Alberta, like west in the mountains there. It's all on fire. Cornwall, yeah, we're on wait list for that one. That one's sold out. Hampton in New Brunswick, that one's sold out August 10th. Chaz, August 17th, that one's not sold out, still available. VFGPA in Victoria, sold out August 19th. Nanaimo Fishing Game, that one's August 20th, coming up soon. August 24th in Bonnyville, that one's got a pile of people, but still a couple spots left. August 31st in Lloydminster. That's Alberta, Saskatchewan. You pick what you want to call it. Technically, the range is in Saskatchewan, but it's close enough. And then September 7th, there'll be a Lady Seed and Blue Ridge, Blue Mountain, Ontario. And then we'll do a doubleheader at Sherwood Park the weekend after on September 14th and 15th. The Saturday is general admission. The Sunday is the ladies club version. So should be good. I will be at both of those in Sherwood Park. Other events. Yeah, I'm actually this weekend here coming up. I'm going to be doing a private PAL training course. And then August 10th and 11th, I've got non-restricted, restricted, doubleheader. A couple of spots left at both. The PAL might be sold out. I don't know. We'll add some more people. I'll get another instructor. We'll do it.
Cool.
Stittsville Precision Rimfire PRS number 2. This is the tank trap match. That one's on practice score right now. So if you like your PRS in rimfire form, head on down to that in Ontario. On the news, I don't know if you saw this, but Hickok 45 mentioned that maybe gun sponsors can be on there, but just without links in the description.
Oh, okay.
Maybe.
Lots of I know he raised the whole thing and he got reinstated, but yeah.
And he got some fairly influential non-gun YouTubers to cover this. Linus Tech Tips covered it.
Okay.
Louis, the guy who does the right to repair stuff, Grossman.
Mm.
Anyways, he covered it. I saw a bunch of other YouTubers covering this Hickok 45 thing, which is fairly interesting. So yeah. Lots of them covering it from a like, well, I mean, you stop their ads and you stop their sponsors. How the heck are they supposed to make do, right? You want the content or not. If you don't want the content, just remove it and then put us out of our misery, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So maybe we can put stuff on YouTube. And I still have to edit the video formats of these things and post it to YouTube. Maybe. New Gun Stuff is brought to you by Bullseye North. Need a new boomstick? Bullseye North is Canada's shooting superstore and a proud supporter of the CCFR with a wide selection of guns and top trending gear for any shooter. And they got a couple of different sales. I think one of them we covered last week. The last week one we covered some of the stuff they have. Hawa stuff at 15% off. This APC, so this one's Australian. We found out last week that this is Australian. They have their 6.5 Creedmoor with a chassis for $11.58. And a variety of other Hawa stuff on sale as well. The other thing that Bullseye has on sale, they have some stuff on for 50% off. If you're looking for an Invector 20-gauge choke, they got one. For a turkey for $13.
Oh, really? That's
cheap.
Yeah. That's
a cheap choke.
Yeah.
I don't hunt turkeys, so I don't know if 20 gauge is the right gauge for something like that. But yeah, they got it. If you have a Savage 110, they've got the Weaver Tactical Extended Multi-Slot Base. So it's a pick rail with 20 MOA for $56. Actually, they have a couple of different Weaver tactical rails on there. They have Remington, Savage, both 20 MOA. And they've got some secure wall stuff and some random bits and bobs. So definitely check them out. Rangeview's got a pretty big sale coming up here. And there were a couple of things on here that looked fairly good price. This GSG 16, you know, take it or leave it. Buckshot, 250 rounds for $190. That looks pretty good.
Yeah.
This one looked really good. 6.5 Creedmoor HSM Trophy with 140 grain burgers for $52 per box. That's good for like a good bullet, a precision bullet for $52 per 20. Yeah, I like it. Horny Match 7mm PRC rifle ammo, 180 grain ELD, $61. Also pretty good. Seiko TRG 6.5 Creedmoor with an OTM for $43. And no one should buy extra mags for the Henry AR-7 because it's crap to shoot. The one that it has in the stock is all you need. Rangeview also has the FG-42-9. This is it looks like an FG-42. That's that assault rifle, the real assault rifle from World War II, but in 9mm with Glock. It looks not quite right, but it's also $1,200. So the price is pretty good. Oh, they have some with the black stock. Well, what's going on here? This one's got a brown stock. This one's got a black stock. This looks better. The Glock mag on the side looks silly, but kind of looks like the right kind of thing. Anyways, they have one of those things for $1,300. I Run Guns has the CZ Bren 2 5.56. This is the 14-inch barrel version for $2,000 US or $1,969 US, available for import. So they've got that available. No other fees. Just pay for shipping and GST. That's it. Or sorry, GST. So, yeah, no import or anything like that. That's just the price that you'd pay. This one was kind of interesting. Frontier Firearms is selling the Charles Daly. So this is that single shot, really inexpensive shotgun. But they're selling it with a conversion kit that will fire 380 ACP, 9mm Luger, 38 Special or 357 Magnum, 40 Smith & Wesson, 44 Magnum, which I guess it would shoot 44 Special as well, 45 ACP, 410 or 45 Long Colt, and 20 gauge. So just a whole sleeve of reducers all in one.
That's kind of cool.
I've seen the reducers separately. Oh, it's $799. Okay, well, you're paying mostly for the reducers.
Yeah.
Because the shotgun itself is like $200 on a good day. I mean, this is the wood one, so it's a little bit nicer. So that would place these at like a $500 value, give or take, those reducers. There's lots of them. Sometimes you can get the individual ones for cheaper, but I guess 8 fully rifled adapters, I guess, except for those shotgun ones. But yeah, neat. And Gotenda had a sale, their anniversary sale that's ending soon. It had a couple of interesting things in it. The Remington Thunderbolt. Okay, it's Thunderbolt. It's crap ammo, 22LR, but it was 6.8 cents per round. That's getting down there. It's not 4. In the past, it was 4, maybe 5 cents per round. Not there yet, but it's coming back down. The nature's healing. Definitely healing here. And then they had Little Gun for $39 per pound. Oh, I want that so bad. But I just don't want to buy anything else. If anyone who knows me is listening to this, I want to get into a group buy, and I want to add some Little Gun to your order ordering from these guys. If you are there in the right spot, right time, they had Norinco Red Box 760 by 39 for $259 for 500 rounds, so 50 cents per round, which is kind of the going rate for that stuff if you can get it. So pretty good pricing. That's all I found that was interesting. Getting into our main topic, we thought we'd talk about not silly hats, even though that's what we have in the show notes here, but talking about dealing with hot weather. We've talked about cold weather before. I don't know that we've talked about shooting in extreme heat. I don't think we've talked about it before.
Yeah, I don't think so.
No. I don't really experience this that much, though. But I have. Yeah. Okay. 2 years ago? 2 years ago, Battle of Alberta, I got heat exhaustion pretty bad on the build day. And it didn't even take long. So I got out there. I started building the stage I was supposed to build, and I was out there just like, you know, screwing some walls together. And I started baking my noodle something fierce, and it didn't even take that long before I was like, I don't feel good. I don't feel good at all. And I was drinking lots of water. I was staying hydrated, but it wasn't enough. It wasn't enough just to stay hydrated. I think like the hydrated one is the easy one, right?
Well, and like that's kind of low hanging fruit, because like you just said it with the water. Water isn't enough. Because when you sweat,
think it would be.
No, nope.
You know, people, you know, we come from Africa. Like, it's hot there. People would just like hang out and just, you know, drink enough water. Yeah. You should survive. But
no, you need electrolytes so you can actually retain that water. Because when you sweat, you sweat out a lot of salt and everything. So you need to bring in electrolytes. Queen of Lunatics saying liquid IV. Liquid IV, LMNT.
Is that beer? Is that liquid IV? No?
No.
Is that chugging something? those aren't things you should do when you're dehydrated? I've been doing this all wrong.
Yeah, you have. Yeah. I look for at least, like, you'll see, and like, they're expensive. You go to Walmart and they're only like 300 milligrams of sodium or whatever. And they'll have like the little powder packs. But if you look, like the LMNT is 1,000 milligrams of salt. if you're dehydrated or you start getting cramping or whatever, that's going to bring you back. Like, and they talk about in survival, bring a little packs of salt. And if you're severely dehydrated, that's why you throw the salt in your mouth and then you'll retain your water. So water isn't enough.
Do you know what would be great for salt and flavor? Mm. So I've had to watch my salt because my, you know, blood pressure was high. It's back down now through diet or whatever, but I was watching my salt. And one of my favorite things to eat at the range, because it's so easy to set up and so easy, quick to eat, instant noodles. But if you look at the side of an instant noodle package, it's like, blah, 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 90% of your sodium intake for the day. It's in that tiny little packet. So if you wanted to like regain your salts, boy, one of them little packets from a thing of instant noodles would, that'll dose you up real quick.
Yeah.
And it might taste good too. There might be some little leeks and that kind of thing in there. Some dried mushrooms, maybe. Depending on how fancy it is. Oh, pickle juice. Oh. Chug, chug, chug. Shots, shots, shots. Yeah, that'll get you going.
Yeah. But yeah, so yeah, nutrition and water and electrolytes. You fluids with electrolytes that you properly hydrate.
Yeah.
Have some, like, if you're down here, like, I'm not, that's something I'm trying to figure out to motivate myself to go out and shoot, because 100 degree heat is hot, and it's, even when it's dry, it's not something you necessarily want to do, and mm-hmm. you gotta watch it, but you gotta get shade. That's one reason for getting the awning on the truck, because I can pull right up to the bay, so I can pull that awning out and get some shade.
Makes a big difference.
Or, yeah. Like, a canopy or something. I was actually talking with John McLean about this over the weekend, asking him about what he does for hot weather. And basically, yeah, he's got a cooler of ice with a bunch of water and electrolytes. He'll go out, shoot for a little bit, get in the shade, rehydrate, go back out, do it again. And he's just like, you're not just hammering it. You're taking a little easier pace, and he'll do that for a few hours. But you got to keep, that's the biggest thing, is keeping hydrated and finding some shade, getting some rest, like not just going hard, going shifts.
I've seen, especially like bigger guys. I'm saying bigger in a nice way. Fatter guys. I consider myself a little bit fat. You may not be able to drink enough and sweat enough to actually keep the heat off. You might need something frozen or something cool or some way of cooling yourself off that's better than just that. One thing I like to do, if I got to bring a cooler somewhere, I'll take some Gatorade bottles of, just Gatorade, like buy it bulk, because trying to get one at a gas station, they're like $3 or $4. But you go to Costco, you get a whole rack of them, throw a couple of those in the freezer. And I put those in my cooler with my food. That's my ice. Mm. And then what, like midday or so, I'll pull one of those things out. Oh, it's so cold. There's a bunch of ice in there. And that's really good for motivation, a little bit of electrolytes, and cooling you off. Like that ice really cools you off, like really nicely.
Yeah. You gotta be careful though, because you can't put, I don't feel like you should be putting your body to so much extreme changes, like from super hot to like now you're just freezing yourself.
I don't think you're gonna freeze yourself with like 600 mils or even a liter of icy, because you have to wait for it to melt too. You can't just, because it's frozen solid as a cube. But then the other things I'll do is like, you know, throw some, like splash some water, some cool water on me or something like that, so I can, you know, cool off that way. And then I think the most important thing is silly hats.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Yeah. I've got a buddy of mine, like at that event where it was super hot and I like cooked on the build day, my buddy was still coming into town. I'm like, yo, get me a big, like sun hat or something like that. He found this one for $5. And I was like, it looks dumb, but I love it. Just to it looks stupid with these headphones on. It looks stupid normally. Even if I put sunblock on, I bring sunblock. It's in my vehicle all the time. Sunblock and mosquito spray. Even if I put sunblock on, I'll get red just from like being in the sun for too long. So throwing that guy over top, now the back of my neck and the front, it's all covered, and I'm not going to roast for no reason. Yours is better. I need to get some. Yeah. Oh, it's got a flag underneath.
Oh yeah.
Oh, I need that. That looks way cooler.
Yeah. So yeah, this one's pretty nice and it keeps the sun off you. But yeah, and then like do you get the sun shirts too? Like even like with my jerseys I got this year, like they're like UV. They're like the hoodie is not for cold weather. It's actually it'll be cooler weather because I'm still not afraid of the sun, but I should be wearing more of those sun shirts, those longer sleeve sun shirts.
I end up ditching. I ditch as much clothing as possible. I got down to shorts,
that's
t-shirt.
That's why I got the sleeveless because I just love it. Back to cooling yourself off. These things, these are like a cooling towel.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just
like hyper absorbent ones.
You literally pour water on this, wring it out, and it gets ice cold. So you can have one of these with you. Mm-hmm. We usually, whenever we're doing something sports related, we have it with us in case of like heat exhaustion or something. And you like, okay, we need to cool you down right now. Then we'll have that.
Yeah. Water carries it, like carries a ton of heat away from the body. So and especially when it evaporates. I've got one of them neck things that you can like put on and like,
oh, the gaiters. Yep.
Oh man. Every once in a while, I don't have something like that. And the back of my neck just roasts and there's just nothing about it. It's like, those are nice when you need them. And you've got one.
Yeah.
There's a comment here. We had a heart guy have a heart attack on the range during a match a few weeks ago in 30 plus weather. Yeah. It's stressful to the body. And if your body is like not in peak condition, yeah, I guess that kind of thing can happen. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's, I didn't think about that. Impact on shooters, one thing. Impact on equipment is another. Different dope, overpressure, not keeping ammo in the shade, getting dangerous. I know for the for a three gun, if you're shooting open shotguns and you have your magazines, like your magazines full, a lot of those guys will put their ammo in fully loaded mags in a cooler because otherwise the plastic will deform.
Yep.
Then they get
you. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's a good point that it's not just you, it's your equipment too. And I mean, if you want accuracy in your ammo too, even if you're shooting rifle, like if you have a hot cartridge versus like a normal damp cartridge, it's going to shoot differently.
Mm-hmm. With Maple Seed on, just because like so many people that I shoot with use the Cabela's mats. The Cabela's mats have black rubber on them.
Yeah.
And in the heat of the day, the sun's like directly overhead and it cooks those things and people get their arms down. They'll burn their elbow. They'll get like, second degree burn on their elbow from sitting on it. So what we do is I'll clear rifle and then we'll flip the back of the mat over top the rifle, keeping the rifle cool. And the most importantly, the mat. So you don't cook your elbows.
Oh yeah. And like, learned that real quick down here. Like even the Jeep, if I go tops off or doors off in the Jeep, I got to have a towel or something on my seats or they will burn you. And it doesn't take long with the sun, anything metal. Like if you keep your gun laying out in the sun for 5 minutes, you're not going to be able to touch it.
Yeah. Yeah. How do you reckon? So, so far we talked about stuff. Anything else that you do for yourself? That's about it.
I try to make it to the cooler part of the day.
Mm-hmm.
So like I'll try and go in the, if I'm going to the range, I'll try and go in the morning instead of like 2, 3, 4 o'clock. Like you get to that time. Yeah. You're over 100 degrees and the cooler part of the day, you might be 80 degrees. But if you had to, just make sure you're hydrated. I would get one of these wet towels. You wet it down. It cools down. Wear the hat. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't usually, but on the really big sunny days, wear the hat. Make sure you have an escape, basically. Like we were saying, the shade, the hydration, and the ability to cool down. Whether it's keeping your vehicle running on AC because the shade's not doing it, you need to just jump in the AC for a few minutes, or it's the cool towel. Just something that if you need, you can cool down, get out of the sun.
Yeah. When I'm ROing and I'm on the bay all day in the sun without cover, because like both the ranges I belong to, they have covered shooting points. And like I can go to the range in the middle of the day when it's 35C out and I can shoot and I'll be fine. I'll drink some water. I'm in the shade. Who cares? But it's if I'm ROing, it's a totally different story. If it's like 26 to anywhere above that, it's hot. And I typically I'll typically would be wearing my muffs. It looks dorky, but I'll put the hat over top.
Well, see, I can't wear the muffs.
I'd rather just survive. Like it's not a matter of looking dorky or not. I gotta make it through the day.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
And this will help me make it through the day. I could do earplugs too, but as an RO, like they get right in there. I can't hear anything. I'm dead to the world. I can't.
Well, you
can't
get the electronic in here.
I haven't found any that fit my ear to where I like it. Even like the formable ones. I just haven't been pleased with how they fit my ear. Maybe I got weird ears, but yeah. The foamies, like they work great. I can't hear shit. Fantastic. The over the ear, great electronics. I can hear it. And they're not hot enough that I don't want to wear them. Like even in the high heat, I'll just keep wipe them off every once in a while, get that sweat off of there. But yeah. I got to wear something like this just to keep from dying when I'm, and lots of water, lots and lots of water. I try to bring, four times more than I think I'm going to need.
Oh yeah.
So if it's me, myself, I'll bring 2 gallons. 2 gallons of water, that's enough. And I used to just bring like a milk jug, like a 1 gallon jug of milk of water. Milk would be funny. but I ran out a couple of times. So it was like, oh, it was a really hot day. I got to the end of the day and I'm like, I'm fishing extra bottles of water out of my car to finish the day off. And I got to wash my hands because they're dusty and dirty and leady. And I don't have I don't know. I kind of want this water to drink. So I'm like, fuck that. I got one of those little, like a smaller, not the 4 liter, 5 liter or whatever, water, the blue water jugs there.
Okay.
Like a mini version. That's like a 2 gallon deal. And that 2 gallon one has been tight for me. That one's been exactly what I needed for more than enough water.
Yeah. I don't think I go anywhere without like a dozen water bottles. Or like there's the 0.5 liter water bottles.
Yeah.
I just get flats at work. So yeah, I don't think I go anywhere without a dozen of those.
Yeah. I like the big jug. It just makes for, because if I'm going to, again, like if I'm going to pull my cart, I will throw a couple of like really big water bottles in there.
Yep.
Not the 2 gallon thing, but I'll just leave that back in the car and refill during the day.
Yeah. If I'm pulling the cart, I have a 0.5 gallon water bottle that I'll fill the water bottles in and drink that. And then, you know, you got time between stages. If that's getting low, I can go top it up back of the truck.
Yep. Spray sunblock. The rub-on sunblock is good for, like, the coverage, but sometimes the spray stuff's good for, like, I don't want to just get my hands greasy.
I'm not the one to talk to about sunblock because I don't use it.
I'm going to get that melanoma stuff.
So I've been noticing, like, I'm starting to burn a little bit more than I would normally.
Mm-hmm.
So I should start using it, but yeah, no, I don't use sunblock.
Get them weird looking moles. You'd be like, I didn't have a mole there before. Can happen to you.
Yeah.
To you.
Well, yeah. The amount of sun down here. Definitely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, indeed. I don't think I do anything else. I think that's all I need to do for the heat.
Well, yeah. You're just monitoring yourself, have the stuff there to deal with it, but monitor yourself. But more water, like you hit it on the head, like more water than you think you're going to need.
And don't go at full bore, like slow down, purposefully slow down.
Yeah, work on the smaller stuff, smaller segments. Yeah.
Well, if you're at a match, like, yeah, reset, but you don't need to like running to reset. Normally I like to do that just as like a fun thing, but yeah,
well, and
it's not so fun when it's like 34
at least
out.
Like a bottle of water a stage at least.
And watch, if you're not going to the washroom, you're probably not drinking enough water.
Yeah, well, at that point, well, no, at that point you need electrolytes because your water could be just going right through you.
Mm-hmm.
So
yep, I could need more electrolytes. That's what I gotta do. I'm gonna like so sometimes I still have instant noodles, but I cut it. I'll go half on the pack. So which means that I've got a couple of full packs left over. I'm gonna store those things in my range bag, and I'm like, I'm drinking a lot of water. I'm gonna do one of them instant noodle packs. I'll let you all know what it tastes like. Probably better than straight salt. I'll mix it with some water.
Well, no, like that's what I was saying. Like they have the pack, like the flavored packs. They have like the LMNT, and I believe like and that they have other vitamins too, like magnesium, potassium, and that in there. But it's just like your main electrolyte is could come from sodium.
I got to imagine that the instant noodle pack is cheaper than any like medicinal thing you can buy aftermarket. It has to be.
Yeah, that's how you're gonna hydrate drinking noodle broth.
Put a little cup, put some water in there, put your instant noodle in there. Oh, man. If it's one of them fancy Korean ones that's got the little like grease pack you put in there, the butter and oil and all that kind of thing, just drink it down.
Oh, yeah. I'm hydrating and lubing up.
Yeah, I need a little bit of fat in there too, right? Yeah. Like I watched on Alone, you need the fat. So yeah, probably need that for when it's hot too, I'd imagine.
Yeah, you need the fat
more,
too.
More diet tips on Slamfire Radio.
Yeah.
From guys wearing silly hats. Okay, I think we got this topic handled.
Yeah, yeah. I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's get into listener feedback. Is this stuff new? Did we change this?
Yeah. Oh, the emails? Yeah. Yes, the emails are new.
Fantastic. Do you want to take the first one there?
Sure. Good evening, Slamfire Radio. It was a smaller crowd this year at Steel Challenge Canadian Nationals, but it was still a great success. Multiple national records have been shattered, which also marks a pause on my attempt to achieve A-class in PCC optics. Mr. Rutledge was able to pull off a blistering 60.72 total time in PCC optics, which was a massive 9 seconds faster than before. We should get him on the show sometime, more importantly, to talk about the other side of his shooting career. Meanwhile, I was about 0.9 seconds faster than the year prior. And surprise, I may have used up all 5,000 rounds of the K9's lifespan. It's a bit odd, but the blowback gas is starting to escape everywhere and injecting into my Mark I eyeballs. I might have more updates in the upcoming episodes. Shoutout goes to everyone who attended Steel Challenge Nationals, and especially to the staff that worked under the sun for 2 full days. Thanks to our match sponsors, I may or may not have a special package coming in. And a special shout out to the most decorated competitor, Kayla Hughes, for representing the youth and ladies. She got like 5 medals. I'm sure she will be the lady grandmaster in no time. Good night. Best regards, Tony of Calgary.
Tony, have you scrubbed the chamber of your PCC yet? Because I feel like that blowback gas should be sealed by the case as it's firing. And if it's getting back into your face, that chamber might be cruddy.
Mm.
Why else would it be coming back, right? Okay, that straight case, like it's blowback. So it's coming back and it's spraying out like around somewhere. There's got to be some crud in the chamber, or the chamber's worn out. But at 5,000 rounds, I don't think it should be. For 9mm,
no,
it's not high enough.
No, you don't have, you're not running that high of pressure.
Are these reloads or are these factory ammo should be sealing? Reloads, yeah. I could see like some reloads, you might get like a lot of gas around the brass. Mine does.
Yeah.
To that to me. Yeah.
Yeah. That would be another thing is just check your grip. But a shot, it should expand to chamber and it should be fine.
Should, yeah. But right, like as it blows back, because with the blowback, it's moving as it's firing. So it's possible. It's just, I would think that it would. Anyways, try really scrubbing your chamber. Get a drill, get your rod with a brush, and just really get after it. Maybe there's some crud in there. There might be a carbon ring or some lead or something in there that's keeping it from giving you a good seal around there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or it's not cut properly.
That's entirely possible too.
Yeah. This next one here's from Gavin. As a frequent listener, I'd like to say that I enjoyed many of the hosts, especially Tony. I'd like to see Dustin as a host. He understands the nitty-gritty politics that go into advocacy, and it's a talent that complements other hosts' abilities. Also, he likes guns, and that's rad. I think that that last one's table stakes for this show.
Yeah.
Yeah, you have to like guns. That's yeah. part of the pro-gun podcast part. Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you want to get into the YouTube comments?
Sure. So Tony's been going back in time. And so he's got a few comments here on episode 427 with Vortex Optics. First one was 1540. Inside the Batcave is cool. What happened to the CCFR radio neon sign after the move? And it went above the door. You can kind of see it there in the camera. So, yeah, went above the double doors coming into my studio. And he goes on, wild duck cooking was mentioned. I wonder how a wild Peking duck would taste. Wow. I haven't even had Peking duck, so it'd be interesting either way. Adriel?
Well, I mean, I've had duck in China. It's not been wild, though. I have no idea. It's all farm there, so I haven't had.
So how would the prep be different for... Isn't that something that like takes like 24 or 48 hours to make or something like that?
The Peking duck? I just eat it.
Okay.
I don't know that part.
I could be completely wrong. I thought it was one of those long multi-day dishes.
Mm.
Okay. And then he says, male versus MOA discussion. MOA is technically metric. It's a fraction of a degree, which I understand better than rad. Rad only became a thing in high school. And I was always understanding that it was the other way around, that mil was basically the metric of ballistics.
And well, okay. Metric is defined by using base 10s.
Mm-hmm.
Mil is base 10. MOA is using a degree, which is 360 in a circle, and then a minute, which is 60 of those. That sounds not like metric.
That sounds like, more imperial.
Yeah, arbitrary.
Yeah, like 12 inches in a foot, and yeah.
We're going to make 60 of these things, and then 60 of these, and then 24, and then just making stuff up. Whereas metric should be base 10 for everything. So
yeah. That's why I always understood was MOA was basically like your imperial and mil was metric.
Yeah. I don't know. Like you could say that MOA is not imperial, but mil is definitely metric.
Right. Yeah.
Cause like that base 10 thing for sure is metric. Whereas like MOA, it's gotta be, if not imperial, like old timey.
Yeah.
Old timey when they were like shooting from ships and they're like, we're going to use 1 minute and there's a clock in this degree somehow. And, you know, I don't know how that comes into it, but
yeah,
I'm getting off topic here.
Yeah, that's all right. And then we got a few comments from Eddie on last week's episode. First says, happy birthday to Adriel and Kyle. Well, thank you, Eddie.
Thanks, yeah.
Then he says, you guys should bring on Cowtown Tony as new host. So, how many hosts are going to be added? Is this by viewer and listener votes? If so, is it first past the post, ranked ballot, or proportional representation?
You'll find out soon enough. We'll say that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And he says, Bullseye North is a great store and sponsor. I just got a Magpul Hunter stock from them in their last sale. Too bad about the new YouTube sponsor policy. They get stupider by the year. I guess I'm one of the few that likes watching the podcast here. The video is available in HD. You can get a lot of info from body language. And my schedule doesn't allow me to view the show live. Hmm. Awesome.
You can get a lot more from body language. You can get more from seeing the stuff that we're talking about as well. But at the same time, it's long. I like listening to this kind of content when I'm driving.
Oh, the whole way up to Minnesota, it was just podcasts.
And podcasts.
Pretty much every day of my life is just podcasts because I'm sitting in a vehicle. last comment for the night. Adriel, I assume you're using cotton webbing and 1¼-inch hardware to make maple seed slings. You can get proper slings from Ammo Garand. They come with the correct parkerized metal hardware and look and feel real nice. Rick passed that info on to me 2 years back at a Maple Seed event, and I bought a couple.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. If you're in the U.S., they're great. If you want to import them to Canada, they it's not so great. We'll put it that way.
Yeah.
But yeah, Amalgran slings are great. Those are the inch and a quarter hardware. For Maple Seed, I use inch because I can't get inch and a quarter buckles that are any good. And running cotton in them doesn't work. And it does work. Like, I can run the nylon or the polypropylene sling material. And it's lightweight, waterproof. This cotton stuff, if it gets wet and I put it in that bag, I have to take it out when I get home.
Yeah.
The polypropylene does not, it actually floats.
Hmm.
This just, you know, takes water on sinks. Okay. But it's the better sling material for sure. Right.
There's one other part to that comment. It says that rotten tallow must have been nasty. So what were you planning to use it for before it rotted? Making soap, candles? I'm gonna add one. Wrapping meatballs. Well, before it's rotten, before it got rotten.
Well, before it's rotten. No, yeah. I don't mind using the caul fat for that, but the tallow itself, I find you eat it and it's like it starts.
Oh, to yeah. On the inside of your mouth. I was confusing the tallow with the caul fat. Yeah.
Yeah. The caul fat's good for that.
Yeah.
No, I was feeding my dog that stuff because it makes for very inexpensive dog food because I'm not going to eat that crap.
Yeah. Tony's commented here, I don't need everything to be a metric. 60 minutes, not 100 minutes in an hour. I agree, Tony, but
we're talking.
Even Canada as a tradesman, I used Imperial all the time. But having just started shooting in mill, I don't mind it. I kind of like it.
I would say that having been a machinist in Imperial and in metric, the Imperial's worse. And you end up you end up doing metric stuff, metric stuff anyways. You say like thousandths of an inch and a tenths of an inch. And, you end up going in that measurement. And then sometimes you go into fractions and it's like, wow, what the fuck? What are we even doing here? Why don't we just use the decimal equivalent? Actually, why don't we just use millimeters? Like,
I was going to say like machinists, I'm sure you're using either probably the decimal, not going to fractions.
Correct. Well, until it gets big enough where they're like, oh, use fractions for some reason. It's like, no, what? Please stay. It's, give me thousands of an inch. Give me tens of thousands of an inch for these kinds of things.
Yeah. Oh, they definitely have their place. I know there was some stuff used millimeters. Well, every building, the drawings for elevations and all that was all in millimeters.
But then your lumber.
Yeah. Your dimensional lumber is all Imperial.
I mean, and like a lot of gun stuff, it's all over the place. You know, we have our inches, we have our millimeters. It's like, 7.62. What an odd number to choose. Why don't you just choose like 8 or 7 or something like that? Why 7.62?
You know what? Coming down here, I have never dealt with so much metric hardware in my life coming down here.
That's funny.
It is. That's hilarious. Like, I'm in the States. I figure everything would be Imperial. It's like, no, everything is metric.
I know for Europeans, everything's metric. Yeah. Like they think in kilometers, millimeters, like the 12 gauge. Oh, well, 12 gauge. 12 gauge is a silly measurement. Gauge for shotguns is.
Yes, it is.
At least we get into millimeters there. That makes more sense.
We're going to take this pound and split it up into balls, and that's going to be represent a number.
Every time I teach people in PAL, they're like, what are you talking about? They think we ranked. So can we talk about like, we measure caliber of the rifle in inches. Okay, that kind of makes sense. Or millimeters. Yeah. Okay, I guess. And then we're going to do shotguns and we do gauges. And they're like, what the hell? And then we do shot numbers. Shot number 9 shots, smaller than number 8. They're like, what? Why? Why is it smaller? I don't know. I don't know. Someone else did this. What about all these other numbers on the side of the shotgun? Oh, okay, that's the size. That's the weight of the shot. Okay, great. What about this other one? That's the drams of the powder. What the fuck are you talking about?
It
just gets like shotguns by far are like the weirdest, worst measurement system ever.
Yeah. I can agree with that.
Dram load. Get real. That's not a real thing. You're making that up.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, that's it for YouTube.
All right. Cabela's like, I will put one of those back on there one of these days. So thanks to our supporters on Patreon and Player. If you'd like to support us, head on over to probably Patreon at this day, these days. But we are running today on Player.
Yep.
Kyle set it up. We're doing it, I think.
Yeah, it's there.
All right. If you'd like to email the show, send an email to slamfireradio@gmail.com. Shoutouts?
Yeah, I will shout out Amax. He was a match director for Nationals. So him and his team for putting on the match. And yeah, like running with everything that that went wrong and fixing it and getting everyone back on schedule. And then sweet. I want to shout out Squad 15 for being the best squad at the match. We got many comments that we basically set the bar for the resetting and everything. So yeah,
it was awesome. The penalties. Did you guys set the bar for that too, or just the?
I don't know. I definitely contributed for that. So
you guys, like, your resets are on point, and the penalties. Wow, never like
out of this world.
I don't think I have any shoutouts this week. I have a couple, but I don't want to get demonetized. So watch YouTube for some Trump-related shenanigans from Grand Thumb or Brandon Herrera. You pick which one. They both did the same kind of thing.
Yeah.
They both had the same thought. They did it in their own unique ways. You watch the one you prefer. And with that, join our Discord server. We post pictures of things that we've been doing up over there. Watch us on Facebook, YouTube, and Player. Join the CCFR, and we'll see you next week.
See you next week.
So if you have any comments or questions for the show, please send an email to slamfireradio@gmail.com. Now go grab a gun and shoot something. When the talking is over, it's time to get a gun.